When I was a lad, an old ship was a pup. Over hills and meadows we'd stray. Just a boy and his dog, we were both full of fun. We grew up together that way. I remember the time at the old fishing hole. When I would have drowned beyond doubt. The ship was right there, to the rescue he came. He jumped in and then pulled me out. As the years did roll, old ship he his eyes were growing so dim. And one day the doctor looked at him and said, I can do no more for him. With hands that were trembling, I picked up my gun. And aimed it at Shep's faithful head. I just couldn't do it. I wanted to run. I wish they would shoot me instead. He came to my side and he looked up at me and laid his old head on my knee. I stroked the best friend that a man ever had. I cried so I scarcely could see. Old Sheppy, he knew he was going to go. For he reached out and licked at my hand. He looked up at me just as much as to say, we're parting, you understand.
That's our friend Freebo with Old Shep from Dog People. Lost another good puppy yesterday. So that song goes out to Claire. And it also goes to Paco and Shelby and all of us who have been gifted with the treasure of wonderful dog companions, including my first guest, whose puppy is still alive and well and gorgeous, but we'll get to that in a second. This is Carol, here with Arts Live and Local. And I have some folks I just want to wish a happy anniversary to. And that would be my brother and sister-in-law, Bob and Vivian. They've got an anniversary coming up, and they're far away from here. So it's nice to be able to send wishes on the airwaves. Well, folks, as ever, all of us are in need of healing. And I want to send some special healing wishes to a good friend, a couple of friends here in Clatsop County, to Debbie H. and to Carolyn. And we miss Randy. Yeah. And, of course, to Tori and Dan, to Sue, to Jeff, yes, and Pam. And to Susie and Frederica, Lisa, Ellen, and to you, whoever and wherever you are, and whatever kind of healing wishes you need, whatever healing energy, whether it's body, spirit, mind, heart, I send you good wishes. And my first guests, as I mentioned, have, they have this project happening. And it is pretty exciting. It sounds exciting. I can't say because I haven't seen it yet. But I've read about it and seen a few photos. And I am so looking forward to learning more today and then on the 23rd. To be able to zoom into their artist talk. So welcome to Anna Dedalus. Anna, hello.
Hi, Carol.
Now, did I say your last name correctly?
Perfect.
Oh, good. Okay. And to Carrie Davis. Hi, Carrie.
Hello, Carol. Thanks for having us.
Good. Now, I kept running into Anna and Carrie, although I didn't know their names. I knew Remy's name because that's why I kept running into them. Their dog companion, who's quite young and beautiful, hang out with his family in Astoria, and every time I see him, I go over and talk to them. Well, lo and behold, it turns out they are quite wonderful artists, a multidisciplinary collaborative team. And they do photography and installation and assemblage and book arts. And they've been working with organic materials and the photographic processes. And here's a quote, witnessing flowing time, meditating on impermanence in process and outcome. Well, congratulations on this long-term project that seems to have morphed several times. So your project is called Palus, is that correct?
Yes, yes.
And that's the Latin word for marsh. And for full disclosure, Anna and Carrie now live in marshland. Well, sort of. They live in Rossburg, Washington, on the Grays River. So, yeah, if I've got this right, you won a residency with Oxygen Arts Center in Nelson, British Columbia, And am I right? You were supposed to go there and do something, but then the pandemic hit and everything changed. Is that the way it was supposed to happen?
Yeah, exactly. You have it exactly right. Back in 2018, we were up there for a symposium, and we decided to apply for a residency, which we got, and they scheduled it out for this August of 2021. And little did we know that 3 years would pass, what would transpire. And so, as you say, we were unable to go up there due to the pandemic and the border being closed. So they reached out to us and asked if we wanted to rewrite the proposal for our location in Rossburg.
So what did you originally plan to do, or were you going to go up there and explore and figure it out? Or Anna, can you tell us?
So we were originally going to do a continuation of our Columbia River Shadows project, because Nelson is actually not that far from the headwaters of the Columbia River.
Okay.
And it seemed like a natural continuation of our project that was a photogram-based project that's very hands-on. We put photographic paper directly in the Columbia River at night.
Ooh.
And exposed it to light and created these images of the water or things that were floating in the water, detritus, anything. We did this at, Carrie, I can't remember, 9 sites along the Columbia River the Hanford Reach out to the mouth. So we were going to do that, but since we couldn't, we completely revamped the project and did something to focus on our very local locale here. We happen to live across the road from a Sitka spruce swamp that is part of the Grays River and the Columbia River Basin, of course. So it's still connected to what we were going to do, but it's also a departure, and it's been really exciting.
So when you say a Sitka spruce marsh or swamp, and hats off to Skamakawa Swamp Opera, I couldn't find their CD here at the station. I was going to play that because it seemed so fitting for many reasons, which you'll tell us in a minute. But does that mean that the Sitka spruce is sitting, are its roots, its feet in water in the swamp?
Yeah, Carrie, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're exactly right about that. So what's interesting about the Sitka spruce is they grow in the uplands, and those are the trees most of us think about, which are the very large trees that we see around all over in this area. But there are also Sitka spruce that will grow down actually in the water, in the moving water that is tidal, and they will grow very knotty and very scraggly, but they will survive. And they will be just out in the swamp. You'll just see them. And so where we live across from the Sitka spruce swamp, it's an area that is reemergent because the Columbia Land Trust was able to breach a levee, which allowed the river water to flood back in like it would have done naturally. And in that process, all the alder trees that had been growing there have slowly died off and turned into snags. And the Sitka spruce trees,
right,
and the other vegetation, redwood, red osier dogwood, some other plants like that have come back and are reclaiming that area.
Wow. That's exciting. Now, that takes place over a long period of time. Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you are not documenting that process. What are you doing? And I heard Anna use a word that I don't even know what it was. I didn't write it down, so I can't repeat it. But it was something technical to do with photography. So,
I was talking about photograms.
Yeah.
That they just, it's a cameraless process. So we've done a lot of those, and we wanted to do something similar but different. So we also are very interested in, so you talk about the long process of a reclaimed swamp. So we're really interested in time and in the cyclical patterns of the tide, because this is a tidal swamp, which is very interesting. The tide comes in and floods it, and the waters come up, and then it runs all out to the river, and it becomes this muddy, kind of murky zone, and you can't really get in there. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to figure out how to observe it, mm-hmm. and to do work about it, and to honor those cyclical cycles. Mm-hmm. So we developed a whole series of things. We started with what we're calling Tori tidal screens that are constructions that are out in the water. And I'll let Carrie talk a little bit more about how those work.
Right. So those Tori screens, we constructed to evoke the idea of a Tori gate, which in Shinto religion basically is a gateway between the mundane and the sacred. So we wanted to formalize the form. Within the Tori gate form itself, we have cotton duck or cotton muslin, which when the water hits it over a period of time, it records, it registers, it leaves a mark. So we have these canvases, basically, that are out in the water that are marked in various levels in a gradiated scale from dark brown to white that show you where the tide has been over the period of weeks or months, depending on how long we left the screens out in the swamp. The other thing that's nice about the fabric is that it will allow light to come through. It's translucent. So in the east, when the sun rises in the morning, we can see the shadows of the vegetation and the logs and the sticks and whatever is out behind the screen. So we get one thing happening on the screen itself, which is the markings from the water, and then we get these reflective shadows that show up on the screen that we photograph.
Wow.
And then we take those screens out of those structures, and we use them later in a different installation, which we can talk about later. But basically, we end up with canvases that are indexed or registered with the markings of the water as it moves up and down.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's standing upright in the water. So it's like a gate. It's like a little Tori gate out there in the middle of the swamp. But instead of looking through it, you're looking at a piece of fabric.
I love this. Now, did you, somewhere here, oh yes, I said you work with organic materials, but it sounds as though your development of the whole process may have been rather organic as well. I mean, you didn't read a book, find out how to do something, and try to do it. You did something, and you found something was happening, and then you kept on following and moving and pulling a little and following again. Is that, that's what I'm hearing here, because who else does this kind of stuff? And I'm speaking to Anna Dedalus and Carrie Davis, who used to be from Portland, but now they're from Rossburg. Now they're local, definitely local folks. So, yeah. I mean, you didn't do this, did you? Well, maybe you did. I don't know. When you were in Portland?
No. We've never done this before, and I think that's the beauty of a lot of artistic projects is that they do develop organically.
Mm-hmm.
And this one really arose out of having been here for a year and a half prior to starting the residency, and just we take daily walks along a dike road that is our road.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we live on it. We don't own the road.
Right.
and we look on one side, there's this new kind of emergent swamp that's been created by Columbia Land Trust. And on the other side is pasture land that is what the swamp had been before Columbia Land Trust bought that.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's as if we see, you know,
mm-hmm. before
kind
and
of like, yeah, and kind of prehistoric primordial swamp on one side, and then what it had been for the past, you know, 100, 150 years when there were all these dairy farms out here. Mm-hmm. So this really did evolve by watching, walking, looking, thinking about these cycles and watching the tide.
And what would you like folks who... Okay, so I mentioned that on October 23rd, which is a week from tomorrow, you will be showing virtually, giving a presentation. First of all, how do people find it? Because the link was way too long for me to copy. So is there a website or something where they can go and find out what the link is for that? Or
Yeah, Carrie, you want to...
And then, once you give us that, tell us what you're hoping folks will... What will emerge for them?
Okay, well, I'll tell you first where you can find the Zoom presentation. The easiest way to probably get it would be to go to the Oxygen Arts Center website, and that center spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. It's up in Nelson, B.C., and when you get to that website, they have various places you can go, and one of them is to the Palouse Artist Talk, and you can just click on the text, and it will take you to Eventbrite, where you can log in and then go from there.
Good.
And
good.
It's free. It's free to attend the talk.
And I signed up for it already. I'm excited to see what you're doing, and it's kind of fun. I'm going to look at that, and then someday... I'm going to come over and visit and see what the heck.
Great.
What was I seeing there? So what are you feeling? What are you wanting to give to folks? Because you mentioned witnessing the flowing time and meditating on impermanence in process and outcome. How does that work?
Carrie, do you want to talk, or should I say?
Well, go ahead, Anna. You can start, and I'll follow up if there's time. Yeah.
Well, there's so many parts to this project, and we'll talk about that at the talk if people want to join us. There are a lot more aspects, and we did some rudimentary photographic processes like anthotype, and the whole thing was really about sense of place. It's very site specific, and it's really about grounding where you are. Mm-hmm. I would say, for me, that's been the biggest takeaway. And we've had friends and other artists watching what we're doing and say, you know, I think this is such a good reminder for all of us to ground where we are, no matter where we are.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah. Excellent. That was my question, and I had no idea what the answer was, but that that feels like the answer. So there's also a 44-page booklet that Oxygen Arts Center, and yes, remember it's R-E because this is Canada, European spelling, featuring your work on this specific project. Is that correct, or does it go into, because you've had other projects as well, and those are online too, so folks can find all about you. I don't know about all about you, but a bunch of stuff. And essays by Portland arts writer Rachel Lafoe and our own Andrew Emlin, local naturalist and musician. Plus a poem by Robert Michael Pyle, another one of our own. So how does that come into play, the booklet that they've put out? Is that accessible?
Well, it will be hopefully soon. We just got hopefully the final draft today, actually, before we got on with you. We were looking at it and approving the final draft, and it's going to go into print. And hopefully it'll be ready by the Zoom talk. I'm not sure if that – I mean, we'll have a version of it then by then. Mm-hmm. Once we get it, then we will have it available for people to get. And so it'll cover just this project that we're talking about today.
Okay. Now we only have a couple of minutes, so let me quickly ask you. Are you both educated, trained in the arts? Is photography your number one area, or, as I mentioned at the beginning, multidisciplinary? So what does that mean? So, Anna?
Oh, we both have art backgrounds. We both have been professional artists for a long, long time. And we do a lot, we work in a lot of different mediums. Mm-hmm. And often our work incorporates photography. But I wouldn't say that we're exclusively photographers. It's definitely multidisciplinary in terms of doing installation, like we've incorporated with this project.
Mm-hmm.
Building, Carrie does amazing assemblage work, building boxes, and we've done performative work even. I mean, this project even kind of has a performative component to it in some ways. So we've done a lot of different stuff, and we like experimentation.
Nice. Carrie, did you want to add anything to that?
I would agree with everything Anna said. We're both, vested in being artists and really love being in the community. When we were in Portland, we had our own gallery, artist-run gallery called Roll Up for a couple of years while we were there, right before we moved out here, which was great to be able to be part of that community in Portland. And we're really excited to be out here and love the arts community in the Astoria area, and look forward to being able to meet. You know, when we first moved out here, COVID hit, so we haven't been able to meet a lot of people, but we're starting to now, and it's really important to us to be able to be part of that community.
Excellent. Well, I have no doubt you will be, and for me, you already are, obviously, and I hope for our listeners now. Again, this is Anna Dedalus and Carrie Davis, a married artist team, and they collaborate, and they get along very well. And I only know that because I see them in the streets of Astoria, and that is, it was quite delightful to find out so much more about you. So thanks for being here with me on Arts. And congratulations on this whole project, which ended up being a lot different and a lot more than you expected. And I love the fact that the residency came from Nelson, British Columbia, and ended up being created literally on your doorstep. And good work doing that. That was quite wonderful. So
thank you, Carol.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
And I look forward to seeing you both on the 23rd. Okay.
Well, likewise.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay. And I have a piece of music here from Michael Franti and Earth from Outer Space. I think it goes well with our last talk. And it's also from the, basically, it's called Buy This Fracking Album. And there's a movement right now to try to stop the export of fracked gas.
If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, to the human race, to all of the people and the streets that I once knew. If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, to the human race, no matter where I go, I still come back to you. If I could fly, 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 so high, so high, higher than the clouds, even higher than the sky. Zoom, zooming in upon the world rolling by. Would I see people in the cities, in the villages and squares, selling in the marketplaces, dancing everywhere? Would I see ladies in the beauty parlor doing hair, and teenage soldiers with their guns up in the air? Would I see a hit list of the species that are gone? Or would I be a witness to the world dropping bombs? Would I see the rainforest, Amazon gone? Or would the whole world sing one song? If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, to the human race, to all of the people and the streets that I once knew.
If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, through the human race, no matter where I go, I still come back to you, you, you. No matter where I go, I still come back to you.
So let me hear you say, now, if I could see Earth from deep in outer space, would I see happiness on everybody's face? Or would I see the wrinkles like roadmap sprinkles of years gone by and tears that ripple like rivers that I dam with plastic bottles and television shows about the next ex-supermodel? I don't know, but I know just one thing for sure. If I saw this, I'd still come back for more.
Oh, yeah. If I could see Earth. If I could see Earth from outer space, Michael Franti, and not only was that relevant to my last guest, but it's relevant to my next guest because that would be Heather Hershey. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Carol.
Good to know you're
very relevant.
Yes, it is, and the name of Melissa's book, I believe, is A Constellation of Scars. So we got the constellation of, hey. I want to give a shout-out, thank you, to Paul, who's making these connections today and last week. We're still all on the telephone, as I'm sure you can all hear, so here on Arts Live and Locals. Thanks, Paul. So Heather Hershey is she's lots of things. She's a retired, I think you're a retired professor of creative writing and rhetoric studies, and you are a writer all over the place. Your name keeps popping up in various publications, but I have you here today because you created, together with Kala, a whole new concept. I don't know whether it's a new concept, but it's new for here. First person authors talk. And I think it's terrific. So why don't you tell folks what it is you're doing? First, let me just mention that this is happening tonight, people, tonight, from 8 to 9:30 p.m. at Kala, which is 1017 Marine Drive in Astoria. Okay, Heather. Tell us what you're doing and who your guest is this time and what's going to be happening.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol. I am with Dinah and Les of Kala producing a show called First Person Authors Talk, as you mentioned. And what we do is I interview local writers. We've had a few different coastal writers on the show. This will be our sixth tonight. So the first part of the show is that interview between the author and myself. And then I open it up to audience questions. We have a few regular audience members recently. You mentioned one, Robert Pyle, who will also be our December guest. But tonight we have Melissa Eskew Osley. And as you mentioned, her book is called Constellations of Scars. And it's set in Seaside.
Ooh. Oh, that's a little scary. Go ahead.
It is a scary book, actually. It's I've heard it classified as a horror novel. I like the title Dark Fantasy. Mm-hmm. The concept or the conceit of the book is that the main character produces pearls from her back. Ooh. In a monthly cycle. And I'm not giving anything away because that's part of the blurb of the book, but it takes on some very serious discussions of what it means to be different, what it means to be alone in the world, what it means to escape abusive situations and actually realize that you were being abused. So it's quite skillful. It's her sixth novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has been here, and she's been doing a lot of different things, but she's won awards for her work. And I'm just wondering, this is an adult novel. Is that right?
This is an adult novel, but I also understand that some of her recent books are young adult novels, and
right.
certainly the main character reads as a young adult. She is in her early 20s, so for me, that's an adult.
Yeah, definitely. So that, but probably from the way you're describing it, it sounds as though it might be not teenagers, for example. Or is that a possibility?
Older teenagers, I think it would be fine for, but it definitely has some grim themes.
So how do you decide, you being a writer yourself, how do you decide which authors to invite? Are there any specific requirements in your palette, or is it, what are you looking for?
Well, I guess that goes back to your first question, and I want to just clarify that the concept of the show is based in a tradition of literary salons and some television shows, actually, and podcasts that are more recent. But we definitely share the idea that both salons and I think a show like Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton, that is kind of a famous one geared towards actors. Obviously, we're focusing on literary artists, but we're interested in this idea that coming together in conversation is not only a way to create knowledge and understanding, but also a way to gather in camaraderie around specific passions like writing. And sometimes writers, you know, what I found fascinating is that each writer is motivated by something different, and yet they all articulate a space of perception, of being, that brings about something we call art and is a process for me as a writer that is very much a dialectic. The writer's always in conversation with the audience. And yet it's such a solitary practice that sometimes we forget that there are so many talented writers here on the coast. So to answer your question, some I've known well and appreciated their work, like our first guest, Cliff Taylor, who wrote The Memory of Souls, which came out last October, has just been doing so well. Is a very personal memoir that also speaks to some universal truths. I had not met Melissa, and I had not met the guest that you actually interviewed, Carol. And so
Alan Rose, yeah.
Yes, when you stepped in for me that evening, and I so appreciate that. So I did get to talk to Alan beforehand, definitely, you know, read his book and was really interested in his work. And so I find that, we're not necessarily, we have had some pretty big names on the show, but our focus is more on, you know, creating that environment for writers to really talk about their art and to do so in a way that brings the community closer together.
Well, since you mentioned it, I did step in, which was a surprise and a little nerve-wracking, because I'm a radio person, and we get to hide behind the mic, and you don't. Yeah. You're out there. You know, you need to watch where your hands go, etc. But I found it quite wonderful to be there. Same idea, talking with the author, but having this audience of interested people. And I don't know if this would be traditional or whether you've made it happen this way, but it's very accessible, so that the people who came to meet this artist and hear about or hear their reading or make a connection with them, it's a wonderful opportunity. It's of course, Kala is an intimate venue, and it opens itself up to that. But which reminds me, folks, this is happening tonight, as I mentioned. It begins at 8, goes from 8 to 9:30, but it's good, especially if you don't have your tickets. I'm not sure whether everything is at the door or what, but it's a good idea to get there early.
Yeah, we do actually start the show at 8 o'clock, so it's good to get there about between, you know, 7:30 and a little before 8. Mm-hmm. Also gives you an opportunity to get a cocktail if you like.
Yes.
Tickets are available at the door, so that's fine to just come on down. And then the show starts at 8, as you mentioned. And I think you're absolutely right that it is, and that is very intentional. I think that this idea that art is something outside of us, or that we exist in a world where, I think for a lot of writers like myself, coming from the world of humanities, mm-hmm. at the academic level, there's a way in which you can find yourself operating from a sense that all you get is prestige. Because anybody who's been in humanities knows that it doesn't pay like the sciences. And beyond that, it often becomes a kind of, you know, there's only room for people who are at a level in their careers where they can be showcased. And mm-hmm. I think that what I've discovered, you know, in my lifetime as a writer and a teacher, professor, as you mentioned, in writing and rhetoric studies at the University of Utah, is that, you know, this process is something that benefits all of us, whether or not we ever publish a book. And mm-hmm. I think that to really examine some of the ways, for example, I'm really interested in how people write first-person narratives. Mm-hmm. And how they interact with that first person character as an aspect of personality, a persona of types, mm-hmm. or whether it's a complete invention, how we create these worlds as fiction writers and novelists, as well as poets. There's so mm-hmm. much, such a rich conversation available about so many aspects of writing that I think we're all kind of hungry for. And especially, you know, we started this venture as things started to open up last May after the pandemic. And I think we were so hungry to gather mm-hmm. and not just to gather for music, which is one of my favorite things. So not at all dissing that. And by the way, Michael Franti is one of my favorite artists. Ah! So he's relevant in so many ways.
I did not know that.
Song, you know, he just did everything. So
nice.
Perfectly. For
nice. So should people dress up for tonight?
I would love that. I have half of my face painted right now.
Woo-hoo, so okay.
I might just go half. Painted, half not. But yeah, and I know Melissa intends to come in costume. So yes, costumes are welcome and not required. Just come and have a good time.
Right. And it is a good time. It's, and again, the beauty of the coast and is the informality. And I think Heather, having attended, Heather does a marvelous job of leading this and setting the atmosphere. So again, that is tonight at Kala, 1017, I believe, Marine Drive, right between 10th and 11th, on the south side. And it's 8 o'clock, and get there early, 15 minutes, half hour, so you can hang out and find your comfortable seat and get your ticket. And it is, the guest is Melissa Eskew Oosley or Oosley?
You know, I think it's Oosley.
Yeah. It's a fabulous name. I know two Melissa. I know Melissa Elsa Ossie and Melissa Eskew Oosley. Wow. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? Her new book, A Constellation of Scars, and a dark fantasy set in Seaside. I hope it doesn't make us nervous about going to Seaside. But Melissa is a wonderful writer, and you can find lots about her past work. She was on this show, actually, I don't know, 2016 or 2014 or something like that, with a young adult novel. So. So thank you so much, Heather Hershey, for doing this and for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just, one last thing, want to let people know that Melissa's books will be available at Kala tonight as well.
Okay, excellent. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And again, that's Heather Hershey. Watch for her. She does good stuff. There's a lot happening these days, folks. Right a block away at 1015 Commercial, that was 1017 Marine Drive for Kala at 8 o'clock, at 7:30 tonight at 1015 Commercial, the 1015 Theater is reopening with The Weir, directed by Karen Bain. She was my guest a couple of weeks ago. It's at 7:30 Fridays and Saturdays for the month, 3 weekends, and Sundays this week and next week. And you can go to the website, the 1015 Theater, that's ER.com, or just go straight to libertyastoria.org and get your ticket there. And while you're there, check it out, because tomorrow night at the Liberty is Bloody Vox. Yes, the dance troupe Body Vox is doing their Halloween special. So, yeah, got some more music here. And this is what's special about this. Janet Bowler got me these albums. Couple of albums from a group called Lights Along the Shore. They talk about University of Wyoming. So I'm sending this out to Stephanie and Lena and Al. And the piece I'm going to play is Flatbush. So I'm sending this out to my family, including my anniversary brother and sister-in-law and my brother and Susan. And enjoy. We'll be back at you. This is Carol with Arts Live and Local. One more guest. Has a touch of klezmer in it. Maybe that's why it's called Flatbush. A lot of klezmer folks there. And by the way, this is University of Wyoming Vertical Dance, not just anything. So check them out. And while I've got you here before my last guest, I wanted to let you know that the Manzanita Writers Series is tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And the Hoffman, Southwestern Arts and Ecology Center has a workshop every Saturday. Tomorrow from 10 to 2, Iris Sullivan. And and she's doing feast tables and treasure maps. And you do need to register. And then Clatsop College from 11 to 2 has weaving traditional maritime materials. And the Astoria Visual Arts annual meeting is at 11 o'clock. That should be fun. It is virtual. And the Cannon Beach Library, also virtual. Facebook Live is on website. And that's at 2 o'clock with Karen Thompson Walker. CannonBeachLibrary.org. Sunday, the Wildlife Center of the North Coast has their gala virtual event. You can go to event.gala.org. gives/founders-event. And you can, you can get something on the raffle, too. And also on Sunday, the Fort George has music from 6 to 8, J.D. Kindle, and Lewis and Clark Reframed Virtual from 1 to 3 from the Lewis and Clark National Heritage. And, okay, folks, here's my...
Girl, are you there?
I am here, and you are, too.
Why, that was hard. This is Nancy Anderson.
I know.
Is it too late?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. Nancy,
oh, good. We had a little trouble connecting. Well, here I am.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. Nancy Anderson has been on this show before, and she knows that what you do is you come into the studio, you take a seat, I adjust your mic, and then you're on the air. But no, not anymore. Now Paul calls you. He hooks you up to me, and then we do a little choreographed dance to get you on the air. So I'm glad you're here. And Nancy is the director of the Napton Cove Heritage Center, which used to be the Columbia River Quarantine Station. That's the Columbia River's Ellis Island, if you don't know what we're talking about. Locals, what do you think, Nancy? Do most locals know what we're talking about?
Well, probably not as many as I wish would, but this this was one of 40 ports of entry, the Port of Astoria, very important in the early 1900s to the mid-1900s to make sure that infectious disease did not enter our ports. And the Public Health Service was put in charge of inspecting all immigrants, passengers, and crew at any port of entry after 1891, because there was a saying that where ships go, so goes the plague.
Oh, wow.
In addition to plague, of course, there was cholera, malaria, smallpox, yellow fever. We had not invented COVID yet, but it's an early story of dealing with infectious disease and trying to protect our good citizens from getting sick.
So was it effective?
Yes. In fact, the United States was sort of credited with cleaning up the shipping industry because of these health inspections. Those early sailing vessels and steamships were very crowded, especially if you were coming steerage, and of course, not very sanitary, and disease spread easily. And that was, there were ports, at the ports of departure, they began to have inspections as well, but there were still long voyages. There were vessels coming to Astoria around the Horn. They were coming from England and from Germany. Up until the Panama Canal was built, but those were long voyages, and that was an easy way to get disease going around, and we did not want that. So because of that, the bottom line, really, because the ship owners had to pay for the fumigation if it was required when they got here.
Oh.
And they had to pay for the return passage of any people they didn't want coming in, somebody too sick, they didn't, or crippled, or whatever. Mm-hmm. They said, nope, you got to go home. And it delayed their cargo and passengers for at least 48 hours. So the bottom line got in there.
Yeah.
And they're saying, ship captains, destroy your rats and mosquitoes, because they carry diseases and they come on these ships and we don't want it here.
Wow. So, but now, when did they start? Oh, I see. 1899 to 1939.
Yeah, Ellis Island opened January 1st, 1892, and there were about 40 other ports of entry around the periphery of the United States that began to open after that. The closest one here was up at Port Townsend.
Oh, wow.
And that was a delay. So if they came in the Columbia River after 1891, and we didn't have a fumigation set up then, until 1899. And if they came in here, they'd say, sorry, folks, you got to take your ship, get back in the ocean, go back over that bar, and go north. You've got to go to Port Townsend because we can't fumigate your ship here.
Right.
So they were really clamoring to get a quarantine station at the mouth of the Columbia. And that was accomplished in 1899.
Now, this is, you're on, for folks who are wondering, where is she talking about? I don't see this thing. It's towards
Nacelle.
It's directly
across the river.
Right.
From the Maritime Museum. If you cross the bridge, you go up 3 miles upriver. You go east. Past the Dismal Niche, that's 2 miles from our place, and the quarantine station is 3 miles upriver.
Okay, and it's on the north side.
On the north side.
Now,
As the main offices and all the public health service physicians lived in Astoria, but by golly, they didn't want all that vermin on their side of the river, so they bought an old cannery and established they used some of those facilities and added more, and that was where it was established. So there was, they rented little boats that went across. The Electro was one owned by the Babbage family. That's a family from Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
And the physicians lived in Astoria. And when a ship needed fumigating, the physician would board the ship, kind of like the pilots used to do, you know, on ship. And if there was disease aboard, they'd say, you folks got to get this ship across the river. You can't come in yet.
Right. Okay, now, there is a tremendous, obviously, folks, you can hear, there's a tremendous amount of history. And the fun part is that BC, that would be before COVID, you could just go over there all the time when it was open, of course, and tour this building that's full of odds and ends.
Yes, and then, of course, we had to love it. You know, the quarantine station had to go into quarantine.
Right.
who would have predicted that 100 years later?
That's great. I love it. Oh, my
anyway,
God.
We have had limited things, very small groups, and following masking and, you know, all the health protocols. But we have curtailed things quite a bit this year.
But we got
funding to do a series of we call it docu-series. We did 7 of them. We took different artifacts from the museum, and we had it videotaped and recorded. And you can look at those on our website. There are 7 of them. They're about 10 to 12 minutes each. And we kind of trail through history. We start with the earliest artifacts that we have uncovered and go up through the early 1938 when it closed.
Well, Nancy, we do not have time to go into all of it because I wanted to talk about Nancy's clothespin dolls and all the goodies, but go to the website, which is what?
Columbia River Quarantine Station.org.
Okay.
Or Napton Cove Heritage Center.org.
Okay, folks, learn about it, and as soon as it opens up again, take a little trip. It's real close and really fun. Thank you so much, Nancy. You'll be back again soon.
Okay.
Take care. Bye bye now. Thanks, folks.
Okay, bye.
Bye bye.
This is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, and streaming live on the web at KMUN.org.